Both of you, husband and wife.
Both of you, husband and wife.
Mom,
unto me.
Putra bhavena. As your son. Brahma bhavena. Knowing that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Cha and asakrit, constantly, chintayanta,
thinking like that,
kritasneha,
dealing with love and affection,
yasyete,
shall both obtain,
madgatim,
my supreme abode.
Param,
which is transcendental,
beyond this material world.
So translation,
both of you, husband and wife, constantly think of me as your son, but always know that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By thus thinking of me constantly with love and affection, you will achieve the highest perfection, returning home back to Godhead. Do you repeat? Both of you, husband and wife,
constantly think of me as your son,
but always know
that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
By thus thinking of me constantly,
with love and affection,
you will achieve the highest perfection,
returning home back to Godhead.
So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki
Jai.
This instruction by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to His father and mother, who are eternally connected with Him, is especially intended for persons eager to return home back to Godhead. One should never think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as an ordinary human being, as non-devotees do. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, personally appeared and left His instructions for the benefit of all human society, but fools and rascals unfortunately think of Him as an ordinary human being and twist the instructions of Bhagavad Gita for the satisfaction of their senses. Practically everyone commenting on Bhagavad Gita interprets it for sense gratification. It has become especially fashionable for modern scholars and politicians to interpret Bhagavad Gita as if it were something fictitious. And by their wrong interpretations, they are spoiling their own careers and the careers of others. The Krishna Consciousness Movement, however, is fighting against this principle of regarding Krishna as a fictitious person and of accepting that there was no battle of Kurukshetra and everything is symbolic and that nothing in Bhagavad Gita is true. In any case, if one truly wants to be successful, one can do so by reading the text of Bhagavad Gita as it is. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu especially stressed the instructions of Bhagavad Gita, Yare Deka Harika Krishnopadesh. If one wants to achieve the highest success in life, one must accept Bhagavad Gita as spoken by the Supreme Lord. By accepting Bhagavad Gita in this way, all of human society can become perfect and happy. It is to be noted that because Vasudeva and Devaki would be separated from Krishna when he was carried to Gokul, the residence of Nanda Maharaj, the Lord personally instructed them that they should always think of him as their son and as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That would keep them in touch with him. After 11 years, the Lord would return to Mathura to be their son, and therefore there was no question of separation. So, Yuvam vam putra bhavena brahma bhavena chasakrit chintayanto krita sneha yashete madgatim param.
Thank you. Kitos.
Let's finish with thank you. So, Om Ganat Timadanda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshuru Meditam Yena Tisma Shigurve Maha.
So, I'd like to touch upon a few different points here. Actually, the first thing I'd like to touch upon is just the
last sentence here, where Prabhupada says, after 11 years, the Lord returned the material to the son, and therefore there was no question of separation. In some of the Acharya's commentaries, and sometimes Prabhupada said, after 16 years, and someplace, after 11 years. So, how to reconcile that? I don't know. Anyway, so, in any case, after some time, the Lord would return as their son and kill Kamsa. So, there's several different things going on here. One, we're going to take the indirect understanding of the verse, or not so much the indirect understanding, but the implicit understanding insofar as it reflects on us and people in general and their spiritual progress. Because we find that there is a class of, for lack of a better word, devotees or parent devotees who are called sahajas. Sahaja means basically to take things very cheaply or easily. And people who take things very cheaply or easily, they jump up to, let's say, a premature absorption or attempt to be absorbed in Krishna's intimate pastimes in Vrindavan, which contrast with the, let's say, the knowledge or the information given in the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Because here Prabhupada is stressing pretty much Bhagavad Gita as it is. So we just keep saying this. One should understand the Bhagavad Gita as it is. One should accept Krishna as he is, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should not think of him as an ordinary person. There's many, many statements of that in the Bhagavad Gita. I mean, obviously, if you read the Bhagavad Gita, you know, Param Brahma, Param Dharma, Pavitram Paramam Bhavam, Purusham, Shashvatam Devyam, Adi Devam, Aham Vibhu. I mean, that really summarizes everything. Of course, that's Arjuna's statement in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna reveals to him, you know, who he actually is, you know, Hamsa Vasya Prabhu, Mataksalvan Prabhajate, Yitimantwaya Vajanti Bhama, etc. I am the source of everything, etc. And then, of course, Tesham Satyutanam, and all those other nice verses, Machita, Matkata, Prana, etc. So, this is really the theme of the Bhagavad Gita, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you should surrender to him. And also there's other themes in the Bhagavad Gita, such as you're not the body, second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, material world is miserable, Brahma Bhuvanan Loka, Pranava Bhartino Arjuna, Amantechi Bhukantya, Puna Janma Navijate. I mean, I've almost fully realized that verse as I'm getting older. Anyway, so then the three modes of nature. I mean, there's many different topics in the Gita, you know, time, karma, the living entity, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, material energy, etc. So this is basically what we call 90% of Bhagavad Gita, 99% of Bhagavad Gita, Sambandha Gyan. Sambandha Gyan basically means information about different relationships of different tattvas and information about different tattvas. Tattva means basically that which is, you know, essential items or aspects that always continue to exist. And that's the jiva soul, that is the marginal energy of the Lord. Then there's the internal energy of the Supreme Personality of God, and external energy of the Supreme Lord, and also there's the Lord himself, sometimes called Tattva Traya, which means the three tattvas, the material energy, the spiritual energy, and the living entity, and of course there's the fourth, which is the Supreme Personality of God. So, anyway, so the Bhagavad Gita is basically presenting these tattvas, and there's a little bit of information about Abhideya Gyan in Bhagavad Gita, like, you know, Machita, Madgatana, etc. Devotees are always hearing and chanting about me, deriving great satisfaction. Also, Sarvadharma and Pavichaja, Mamikam, Shananam, Braja. And there's a touch, just a touch, a very small hint of a prayojana in the Gita. Just like very, you know, like one who goes there and never comes back. Padama, paramamama. But it's not really detailed stuff in the Gita. You know, the only detail you find about the spiritual world is basically natadvasyate suryo nasasa go natpavakaha. Yadgatwa nadigartante tadama paramamama. That's about all the details you get about prayojana. In other words, that verse states that in the spiritual world there's no need of sunlight, moonlight, or as Prabhupada translates it, electricity. Although it doesn't directly mean electricity. It means like lightning or something like that. So one who goes there never comes back again. So here we find Prabhupada stressing Bhagavad Gita, and then as I mentioned before, there's a class of sahajas who really think, you know, we should go beyond Bhagavad Gita and just be absorbed in Krishna's internal pastimes. There's a problem with that. The problem with that is if you just do that and you're not cognizant of the basic information in Bhagavad Gita constantly, as Krishna here advises Devaki, then there's every chance you're going to fall down from devotional service. And just like our example in the Srimad Bhagavatam of Bharat Maharaj, who was on an extremely elevated platform of devotional service. He was on the platform of Baba. I mean, let's talk about the different platforms of devotional service. There's, you know, of course, there's Vaidhi Bhakti. You know, Vaidhi means like rules and regulations, and which is part of sadhana. And then there's Raganuga, which is also part of sadhana. Sadhana means to practice. So you're practicing according to rules and regulations, or you're practicing spontaneously. But in both cases, you're practicing. It's like basic training in the army. Mm-hmm. You're still practicing. And then after that, you get to the Bhava Bhakti. After Raganuga Bhakti, which is the higher stage of sadhana, Bhava Bhakti. Then you're engaged in bhakti, impelled by emotions. Just like actually it's interesting, in this particular verse, translation, or the Sanskrit is, putra bhavena, brahma bhavena. You know, bhava means like emotion. Of course, we are on the platform of bhava now, all of us, that's called bhava robe. Everybody's on the platform of bhava, unless you're a stone or something like that, in one sense. So you can actually do a perverted reflection of the different stages of bhakti, you know, like Vaidhi, Raganuga, Bhava, and Prema, and take that as a perverted way. You know, now I'm practicing to be a demon. I'm spontaneously a demon. Yeah, spontaneously a materialist. Forget about the word demon. Then I'm feeling ecstasy, you know, I'm doing everything like, I would say, oh my God, I shouldn't mention this. I would say the President of the United States is on the platform of Baba in that way. He doesn't have to practice anymore. He's perfected. So anyways, it's interesting. You even have like a reflection, like in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, how the material world is described as a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. You even have a reflection of the different stages of bhakti here in the material world, which is really interesting. So let's get back to the point. So bhava is an extremely elevated stage. On the platform of bhava, you basically don't have any anarthas. But you're not absolutely free of anarthas, according to Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. That is, if you're not careful, they can come back. It's something like the little Dutch boy, you know, that in Amsterdam, that Amsterdam is underwater. But generally, this is years ago, of course. Nowadays, they have pumps and all sorts of systems to keep the water out. But in the old days, they had what's called a dike. And Nowadays, a dike means something different. Anyway, so it means a dam, in case those of you don't know what dike means. So so it's because it's underwater, even though it may be dry at this particular point, at any point the dam may develop a hole in it. And so this little boy, he was very intelligent. He was, as Prabhupada said, he was very much afraid of Maya. I'm using this as a metaphor. Very much afraid of water. So Prabhupada said, us Western boys and girls, that means you people born in India, boys and girls too, are not enough afraid of Maya or illusion. So he was alert, and he was the one who caught the water coming in. And what did he do? He stuck his finger there until he could get more help, because the problem is, it was just a trickle. That's true. But what happens when you get a lot of water washing through a dam that is made of rocks? Does anyone know? Or sand. It just gradually washes the rocks away, and then you get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger holes. So he was very intelligent. So it's like that with Maya. The Maya just doesn't come on like full blown in one instant. You know, all of a sudden you find yourself in a disco with the most beautiful girls in the universe. You know, it doesn't work like that. You know, she's very tricky. And so with Bharat Maharaj, she was extremely tricky. It was just a trickle. You know, going back to that metaphor about the dam. It was just a little cute deer. You know, coochie, coochie, coo deer. You know, who is not going to be attracted to a deer? I mean, even sometimes I'm driving on the road here at night, and the deer are crossing the road, because I'm careful not to hit them. And I'm thinking, how cute. Isn't it? I mean, it's just a natural human response when you're in Maya. When you're not completely Krishna conscious, you just look at a deer. How cute. And, you know, if I found a little baby deer by the road, I'd probably adopt it too. And keep it to attract people to the temple. You'd probably get a lot more people for the Sunday program, you know. If we had a little petting, can you think about it? You know, Krishna's here, Supreme Personality of God on the altar, all attractive. But I tell you, right now, if we had a little deer and the children could come and pet, Sunday feast would double or triple. Isn't it? I mean, all week long we just have people, not just from Cary, from all over the East Coast of the United States, put it on our website. I mean, that shows how strong Maya is, isn't it? Krishna's there. And people come to see on Sunday, you know, ask for some blessings. But a little baby deer would be more attractive than Krishna. So anyway, that's what, it is true. I mean, I'm not just making this up. I think it's a good idea. Wow, coming up with some good ideas for attracting our congregation to the temple. Just in the middle of joking. But anyway, so anyway, Barbara, she just like became attracted to deer. In other words, he was concentrating on Krishna, Krishna's pastimes of Vrindavan. I mean, obviously, he wasn't thinking of the basic philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. And because of that, and because he wasn't on the platform of prema, prema is a different thing. If you're on the platform of prema, anarthas are absolutely God. You don't have to worry. You know, you could, you know, like there's some sages who even did really interesting things, you know, some Babaji's, I'm not going to mention their names, were completely transcendental and maybe even smoke tobacco sometimes. But it's just, they're on the platform of prema. But on the platform of bhava, you got to be really careful. So you always have to remember that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the philosophy in the Bhagavad Gita, the three modes of nature. It's not only when we talk about remembering Krishna is God, there's more to it than that. Like Prabhupada points out here in the purport, it means basically remembering Krishna's instructions in the Bhagavad Gita. That's what Prabhupada's very specific about this in the purport. He doesn't say just remember Krishna is God. but everything that goes along with remembering that Krishna is God, which is basically Bhagavad Gita, some Bhagavad Gyan, and also Abhideya Gyan. So in this way, one will be protected from falling down into this Krishna's illusory energy. So that's one way I'm taking this particular verse and purport. Another way, let's talk a little bit more directly about what's happening here, is Devaki is being told by Krishna, always remember I'm God. Now, the reason she's been told to do that is not that she has a tendency to fall down into Maya. As explained in the previous verse, Krishna just wants to make sure that she's not too much anxiety. That, you know, things are happening properly, not a blade of grass moves without my will, you're always protected. Even though it appears really weird that your kids are going to be killed one after the other, I mean, it requires really strong faith to be imprisoned and at the same time see each and every one of your kids smashed against the wall and maintain your composure and keep having children. I mean, that's the question some people ask. You know, why the heck did Vasudeva and Devaki keep having children, although they knew that every child was going to be killed by Krishna, by Kamsa? You know, people ask me that question. Why do they do this? You know, is this, what are they thinking about? Was it their sex desire was so strong they couldn't stay away? No, that's not the problem. They are high-class people. It's not that they couldn't stay away from each other. It was they had that firm faith. So they were that Krishna would appear as their eighth son, and he would kill Kamsa. So they're able to tolerate everything that was going to happen. That's why Krishna keeps saying that to them, because they're gonna be subject to so much toleration. It's unbelievable that in the annals of Vaishnavism, very few devotees have been asked to tolerate things to that extent. So therefore, Krishna is doing that. However, after Krishna comes back, which is interesting, then Devaki forgets that Krishna is God and just relates to him as her son. So, in other words, what I was thinking about this, it's circumstantial that Krishna is wanting Devaki to think of her as God. And that circumstantial type of, let's say, imposition, not exactly, imposition of circumstantial remembrance occurs with many devotees in the Vaikuntha or outside of Vrindavan realm. I was comparing that to Arjuna. It's not that Krishna was telling Arjuna at every minute before the battle of Kurukshetra, you've got to think of me as God. He was very happy that Arjuna was relating to him as his buddy. Right? I mean, the Bhagavad Gita, you know, Arjuna asked for forgiveness. You know, we were lying on the same bed, you know, and I was like friends. Sometimes I guess he would punch him in the shoulder or something like, hey, buddy, you know, how you doing? You know, you can picture the whole thing, how friends deal with each other. You know, it wasn't like a on-reverent type of friendship. It was not quite as intimate as the residents of Vrindavan, but it was still friendship. You know, wrestling with Krishna, you know, that's what friends do. Joking with him, teasing him. You know, what? You know, it's a nice friend who will tease each other. Oh, you don't know anything. Of course, he knows everything. Of course, later on in the Bhagavad Gita, we have Krishna telling Arjuna, you don't know anything. But that's more serious. But at a certain point, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, Arjuna, accepts Krishna as his guru. A certain point. Which is actually interesting. I was just reading the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is accepted as Arjuna. Arjuna says to Krishna, now tell me, you know, I accept you. I surrender unto you. And then after that, Arjuna tells Krishna what he wants to do, which is interesting. So I was thinking, I could very much relate to that. in my relationship with my disciples. They say, oh, I surrender to you, Gurudev. Here's what I'm going to do. So I'll tell you exactly what happens in the Bhagavad Gita. You know, Arjuna says, you know, I'm the soul surrendered unto you. And then he says, I'm not going to fight. You know, right after. I mean, actually, it's interesting. I just couldn't read this. Read this part of the Bhagavad Gita. It's really interesting in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Let's see. It's a good one. And I just thought it's just like amazing. Here you go. This is before Krishna starts telling Arjuna, you know, about not being the body. As if Arjuna already knew it. He wasn't the body. I mean, he was raised in a high-class culture. But because he was so much in anxiety, here it is. So in text 7, Arjuna says, now I'm confused about my duty and have lost all composure because of miserly weakness. In this condition, I'm asking you, tell me for certain what is best for me. Now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. And then, of course, in text 8, Arjuna reveals his emotions. I can find no means to drive away the grief. You know, what good is it if I get a good kingdom on earth like the demigods in heaven? And then, hey, text 9, which is what I was talking about, he says, having spoken thus, Arjuna, chastiser of the enemies, told Krishna, Govinda, I shall not fight. Think about that juxtaposition. Where he says, I'm a soul surrendered unto you, and he says, Krishna, I'm going to do whatever I want. So, like I said, it's instructions for modern-day disciples, what they should do. So, you know, tell your act. What did the prophet say? Too much, Chanaka Pandit said it, too much devotion is a sign of a thief. Oh, Guru Maharaj, you're everything to me. Everything. And the Guru Maharaj says, do this. And he says, no. So that's interesting. It's really interesting. So anyway, so getting back to the point. So the point I was making is that outside of Vrindavan, the Braj pastimes, thinking about Krishna as God is like a circumstantial thing when needed. You understand? Like with Devaki, that's the point I'm making. It was needed at this point. Because you're going to have to go through a hell of a lot of things. Woo! So therefore, you better think of me as God. And Arjuna, it's needed. Because you better understand the philosophies so you can carry out your duty. So that's interesting. But in Braj, it's never needed. In Vrindavan, it's not that Krishna says you should think of me as God to anybody. In fact, it's quite the opposite. You should know that I'm not God. I mean, I'll give you some examples of that. One is the famous Chaturbhuj story, where Krishna is hiding from the gopis to evoke the mood of separation. And while he's hiding from the gopis, Krishna decides to play a little trick. He manifests two extra arms. And as he's manifesting two extra arms, the gopis come along, and they see him, and they recognize there's God there. But they offer their obeisances to God, and they basically say, where's Krishna? And so they keep looking, and look, you know, I don't know if Lord Vishnu shows them the way. But anyway, and then Radharani comes, and then Krishna is like unable to control himself and maintain the two extra arms. And so there's no question. And even when there's the demons appear, I mean, for example, Kali, a serpent, it's not that Krishna assures them so they won't be scared or fearful for him, you know, or in anxiety. You see, it's interesting that in Dwarka and Mathura, Krishna doesn't want his devotees to be in so much anxiety. But in Vrindavan, he brings them to the topmost peak of anxiety. Here he's worried about his mother, in this verse, he's worried about his mother being in anxiety. But in Vrindavan, he's not worried. He's not thinking my mother should not be in anxiety. Like when he goes in the Yamuna River, the Kaliya lake, and he jumps on the Kaliya serpent. He doesn't tell everybody beforehand, just know that I'm God. You know, I'm juxtaposing that with this particular verse where he says, constantly think of me as your son, but always, you know, this word always is a absolute word, always know that I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in other words, same thing, constantly thinking of me as the Supreme Lord, and that, of course, the Sanskrit is Brahma Bhavena, to have the emotion of understanding I'm the Supreme Brahman. It's not, it doesn't mean always think, only think of me as the Supreme Brahman. Just, you know, in your heart have that emotion. In other words, be protected. But in Vrindavan, Krishna just jumps on the top of the, that jumps into the Kaliya state lake. And he's basically enveloped by the coils of the Kaliya serpent. And they're seeing the bubbles rising up. And even like some red stuff from, you know, the Kaliya's blood or whatever. I don't know if Kaliya had red blood or blue blood. But anyway, so they're seeing, it's so interesting. And they're seeing the, you know, the bubbling in the water and everything. And they're like, oh my God. And you can imagine how much anxiety they're in. Krishna doesn't say I'm God. But ultimately, you know, he starts dancing on the heads of the Kaliya serpent. Doing his Bhartanatyam dance, And Nataraj. Nataraj can also refer to Lord Shiva, but also Krishna. It means the king of the dancers. And so, and then they're reassured. But he never says, that's because I'm God, you know. They just think, you know, he's empowered or something like that. And, you know, you hear the expressions of the residents in Vrindavan. They say, well, he's been empowered by Narayan. Even though Gargamuni has, you know, said that your son has appeared in previous ages in this different colors like this, they still don't get it. That he's God. And even, we mentioned yesterday, even when Yashodamaya is seeing all the planets in Krishna's mouth, and Krishna just thinks this is not a good mood to have in Vrindavan. Doesn't fit. You know, Krishna's not happy with that. So, in other words, in Vrindavan, the most intense emotions and even pain is felt. Even the most intense emotions, pain, of course, we have these indirect rasas, which are mentioned, and thus means taste, like anger. I mean, another example is Radharani's mom in relationship to Krishna. I mean, she's not thinking he's God. She's thinking, you know, let me get him out of here. I don't want to see him anymore. And then she's ordering, yeah, and then Lalita is there with her stick to beat Krishna if he comes near. And then Krishna has to be tricky and dress up as a lady and drag to see Radharani and, you know, to placate her. Krishna has to bow down. You know, there's really intense emotions there in Vrindavan. It's the most intense place. And, you know, Krishna's bowing down, touching Radharani's feet, and crying literally, and says, forgive me, forgive me. So even Krishna's not thinking he's God there. We're to speak of everybody else. And so that's Vrindavan. However, let's go back to the original thing I was talking about. Don't jump up to that platform. Remember, always remember Krishna's God. Always remember. And that way you can protect yourself from Krishna's illusory energy. Anyway, so this is what I want to talk about. So any questions or comments? We have a minute left for class. Questions? Yes.
So the more deeper the relationship, the more intense is that.
The intensity, the more intimate the relationship. You know, like you see in Vrindavan, only you have the intimate devotees and intimate loving pastimes, you know, playing a flute. Krishna doesn't play a flute outside. Who ever heard of God playing a flute? Isn't it? Or unexcelled beauty. You know, the four qualities that are only there in Vrindavan. Yeah, so in Vrindavan you have the most intense emotions. Just like you see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he exhibited more intense emotions than any devotee of the Lord in the Vaikuntha platform. I mean, banging his head. You know, just like running into the sea. Where is that happening? I mean, let's say the Ramanuja Sampradaya, which they worship Lakshmi Narayan. That doesn't happen. I mean, there's emotions and love and everything like that, but you never hear about Ramanujacharya beating his head on the floor. You know, and the feelings of separation, Govinda, Vidahina Me, you know, Vidayatam, Nimishena. So anyway, but that's something in the future. Right now, Krishna is God. I mean, I think of Krishna God as God all the time, probably speaking, because... Help! Isn't it? I nanda tuch tanuja kinkaram patita mam vishabhaya bambudo kripaya tava pada pankaja sita duli zadra shamya chintaya. You know, that's my platform. Krishna, save me, help! Oh my God, save me from everybody, save me from the threefold misery. Jai!